Okay.
Good afternoon from listener-supported community radio. This is KKRN 88.5 FM. This is Wake Up Call, and I'm your host, Doug Craig. Our engineer is Randy Compton, and we're thrilled to have you listening to us today. Usually we talk to climate scientists on this show, and yet we have someone very special today who actually can help us also deal with the troubles in the world and the troubles in our mind. We're going to talk with Dr. Stephen Hayes, who has come out with a very exciting book called A Liberated Mind, How to Pivot Toward What Matters. Dr. Stephen C. Hayes is a professor at the Department of Psychology at the University of Nevada. He's an author of 45 books and over 600 scientific articles. And his career has focused on an analysis of the nature of human language and cognition and the application of this to the understanding and alleviation of human suffering. He's the developer of relational frame theory and has guided its extension to acceptance and commitment therapy, which we call ACT, not ACT. It's a popular evidence-based form of psychotherapy that uses mindfulness, acceptance, and values-based methods. There are now about 3,300 scientific studies on this work, including over 300 randomized controlled trials and a worldwide association of over 8,000 professionals who are actively developing it. You may have heard of Dr. Hayes from his popular book, Get Out of Your Mind and Into Your Life, and this was featured in my mind, a famous Time magazine article back in 2006. And for a time, it was the number one best-selling self-help book in the U.S. Dr. Hayes has been listed as the 30th highest impact psychologist in the world and ranks among the most cited scholars in the world. And his latest book is called A Liberated Mind, How to Pivot Toward What Matters. Dr. Hayes describes this book as a think book, a self-help book, a personal story, a science story, and it shows why psychological flexibility matters. So, Dr. Hayes, or Steve, you've been writing this book for over a decade, I know, and the ACT community is thrilled that it's now published and in our hands. What can you tell us about A Liberated Mind?
Well, I'm glad to be here with you, Doug, and I'm pleased that there's a room here, even if it's usually talk to climate scientists. Actually, the first book I ever wrote was called Environmental Problems, Behavioral Solutions. So you're talking to an old environmental activist who thought psychology might be helpful in addressing the world's problems. And I'm still trying to do that. And actually, I think this new book, A Liberated Mind, says a lot about how we might come together in community to step up to challenges like the climate crisis. And not just that, the psychological and relationship and family and community problems that we face. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. Maybe even we'll loop back and talk about the implications for climate change and for creating community around how to solve that problem. But the long and the short of A Liberated Mind is we've spent about 40 years trying to dig down to what the 20% are, the 20% of kind of key processes of change. In this book, I call them pivots that allow you to move from being stuck to being able to move forward in almost every area of your life and create, as I say, modern minds for this modern world that's awfully challenging for us. Anybody who turns on their television or looks at their iPhone or whatever feels it. You know, something's going on, and the young people show it. They're having a harder and harder time with stress, anxiety, depression, but not just that, actual suicide rates, etc. So how do we show up as whole human beings in the modern world and find our balance, find our values, focus on what is important, and get our feet moving in the direction that takes us in the kind of life that we want to build and the kind of community and world that we want to build. That's what's in a liberated mind.
You know, I'm a little younger than you, but not much, and we both kind of grew up in the 60s and and 70s, and back then, you know, I found some parallels with your life and mine. I was in high school working at a crisis center, talking to people on the phone about their problems, and then I shifted at a later time before I went to college. I lived in an ashram, spiritual ashram, and our spiritual leader eventually let us down in some ways, and you've been through something similar, but it left me with... You have a very interesting biography, and we want to get into that for sure, in terms of your own personal struggles with anxiety and what it's meant for you personally and professionally. But like you, you know, I had then had this lifelong hunger for discovering the intersection between science, psychotherapy, and spirituality. And it wasn't until the Time article in 2006 that I figured I found it. And I went online and tried to find you, and somehow I got a cell phone number and I called it. And my recall is you were over in the South China Sea or something on a boat, and I reached you. And
oh my goodness.
That's my recall. I don't know if I'm making that up, but anyway.
No. I know that trip well, and it's linked to this whole journey. Tell me, did I take the call?
You took the call, and you said, yeah, I'm on a boat on the South China Sea. And I said, well, I want to train with you. When's your next training? And you said, it's in Vancouver, Canada. And so I said, thank you. And I hung up, and I made my reservations and all that. And so that's how started my journey with you. And if things work out, I will train with you for my 10th time in Portland at your 4-day boot camp next year, I think in February. So, yeah, so, you know, my connection with you has been profound personally for all the struggles I've gone through personally, but it's been so gratifying as a psychologist that when my clients come in to have something that works. And as I say, even though it is very scientific, very empirical, it also connects us with this spiritual thing that some people connect with Buddhism, but it's very scientific. And in my view, again, I see that you've kind of cracked the code, I call it, in discovering the relation between psychological flexibility and human fulfillment and well-being. So I'm going to stop talking now and let you talk about psychological flexibility and help our listeners understand what that is.
Boy, you're bringing back some old memories with that thing on the South China Sea. Actually, that was a my first run-in with a billionaire, and he invited me to come out and spend time on his boat. It's a thing called The World. You can Google it and see it. It's this boat that's owned only by gazillionaires that go around the world continuously. And he wanted to put ACT into communities around the United States. And he actually, although never wrote the check, it really got me thinking in different ways. And I'm still in contact with him. He's a good man. I'm on my third billionaire, and everyone just showed up a few months ago, you know, and we're seeing where it goes. You know, the vision that sometimes comes with people of means like that is, how do you do something that kind of can change the world? And that's really where I started. And, you know, my interest in psychology was people like Maslow, peak experiences. You know, how do we really create extraordinary lives? And yet, you know, you kind of look around us, and very often it's just how do you get through the next day? And psychological flexibility is that set of pivots that allow you to take the energy that's inside the problems that you've got and channel that energy into positive a direction. Turns out that if you slow down and you kind of unpack the things that are your worst enemy in terms of the things that really get in your way and in the way of your family and community and so forth, being able to come together and accomplish things, but also just being able to live inside your own skin. If you dig inside what's in that, there is an energy in there that's not your enemy. It's positive. It's just that you've been channeling in the wrong direction. As I said, it's kind of the wrong solution to the right problem. And when you can crack the code, in a sense, one way to say it is you can get what you really want, not what your mind tells you might want, you know, applause, a lot of money, etc., but what you really want, a sense of what brings satisfaction to a human life, which is things like being able to connect and belong, or being able to feel fully, or being able to be here present in the moment, or to have a sense of coherence, or and be able to have your life be about chosen meaning, and for you to be able to organize your behavior around that and become more and more competent over the time. And we come into the world ready to do those things. I mean, babies don't have to be taught to feel. They're reaching out for everything, putting it in their mouth, etc. They don't have to be taught that belonging matters. You look at a neonate in the eyes, and you know, we're so evolutionarily established to belong as the social primates that we are. The baby starts dumping natural opiates into its brain, going, you know, I'm being seen. Isn't that wonderful? You know, we don't have to be taught to try to, become competent. We'll do trial and error. Brand new babies just trying to reach things, do things, open things, move things. We don't have to be taught that our self-directed meaning matters. You try to make even a baby do what you want, it will let you know very quickly it wants to do what it wants. And so what's in the liberated mind and what's in the psychological flexibility work is how you can take this evolutionarily reasoned adaptation, what you and I are doing right now, Doug, this symbolic reasoning, the logical problem-solving relational mind, which is different than what all the rest of the creatures out there on the planet are doing, and it's much more recent. Our ability to learn by direct experience is at least 500 million years old. What you and I are doing right now is at most 2 million years old, or 2.8, because we know that the common ancestors of the chimpanzees don't do what your 12-month-old baby does, that if you don't do, never acquire normal language. That's part of the story of liberated mind, is the basic science of just how the mind works, and that's what we spent a lot of time unpacking. So if you let your logical problem-solving, rule-making mind, which is great for doing your taxes, fixing your car, is horrible for peace of mind, love, purpose, you know, being able to be settled into your own skin, and actually coming back to where I started with the climate crisis, gets in the way even of our ability to come together in community and solve the problems we've got. Ironically, the same problem-solving engine, this little dictator's voice within, will divide us and tell us that, those folks are right-wingers, or those folks are left-wingers, or those folks are like this, or I'm like that, and next thing you know, we've got a fight instead of a team working together, even when we're facing things of almost life and death importance, like we are in the case of climate change. And so what's in the liberated mind is how you can sort of take this dictator within and not get rid of it. We need it. I don't want to be my little dog, Dio. The coyotes would here in Reno would get him right quick if he didn't have human beings around him. I don't want to be a dog or a cat. I want to be a whole human being, but I don't want that voice within driving me off the edge of the cliff. And that's what's happening in the modern world. We're being exposed to a constant diet of pain, judgment, and comparison. It's right there on that little computer you got in your pocket. And it's the toxic triad. And if you don't help young people and yourself create modern minds for that modern world, we are going to drive off the edge of that cliff, whether it's, climate change being mishandled, or the immigration situation being mishandled, or just our ability to go through life with aches and pains without being a victim of the opiate crisis. You just make a list of things that we're facing right now. So psychological flexibility is how to get what you want by moving your mind a little bit off to the side, putting it on a leash, and learning some of the counterintuitive ways forward that involve going into your own experience instead of running from your own experience.
If you're just tuning in, this is Wake Up Call on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio. I'm Doug Craig. Our show is focused on a new book by Dr. Stephen C. Hayes, A Liberated Mind, How to Pivot Toward What Matters. And we've just been discussing how the way we use our minds doesn't get us what we want. And I'll just throw out some statistics, some of which are in your book, some of which I found online. In 2017, the World Health Organization rated depression as the leading cause of disability and disease worldwide. About 40 million Americans over age 18 have been diagnosed as having an anxiety disorder. 10% of Americans report frequent mental distress. In 2017, over 47,000 Americans killed themselves. That's nearly 130 people every day. And that rate is increasing. It increased 24% in the first 15 years of this century. The U.S. is one of the most depressed and anxious countries in the world, according to the WHO. It's disturbing. And what I love about ACT is if we could figure out how to scale it up, the things that work in our offices one-on-one can certainly work culturally. And I know that's one of your passions as well, that this isn't just a psychotherapy between a psychologist and a client. This is transformative. If we can apply these in our culture, it could have a dramatic, well, that's what you just were talking about, but it could have a dramatic shift in how we all function with one another.
Yeah, you mentioned those randomized trials at the beginning, and, you know, people, if they're not science types, probably don't know, but it's one of the primary ways we make sure that some sort of intervention really makes a difference and isn't just what we hoped for, but it's actually in controlled studies, pays off. You know, about 40% of those are with depression, anxiety, substance use, things that you would probably think of going to a shrink for. About 40% of them are things like stepping up to the challenges of physical disease. What do you do with a cancer diagnosis? Or how do you manage your diabetes? Or can you lose weight? Or can you stick to your exercise program? Not very many people are going to think of shrinks when they think of those things. You know, they might think self-help, but often they're going to be talking to their family or friends or whatever, or muddling through. And then about 20% are on things like high performance, you know, being able to run a business. What do you do with things like prejudiced thoughts? How can you connect with people who are very different than you? What about your relationships? And again, most people don't particularly think of shrinks when you think of that. And you know, I was my wife's Brazilian. I went to Rio for the Olympics there, first time, wonderful thing. I hope to go to the Olympics again. I recommend it. But anyway, I was there and watched people win gold medals using when out of a therapy context, we call it acceptance and commitment training. It's still called ACT. Using ACT in their high-performance kind of sports-related work. You know, ACT coaches are spreading across the globe. I was just in China a few months ago, and there's a bunch of ACT coaches working with their Olympic team, etc. So, you know, I don't think we're so sophisticated that, you know, we need 10 different ways of thinking about human prosperity and the multiple ways we get in our own way. because we've spent the time to really dig down, we've got, we call them pivots, you know, six pivots. And the metaphor of pivot is like the pin and a hinge. It's the French word for it. Where when you open a door, the direction or the energy is originally going in one direction, but the door opens in another direction. And the hinge does that. And so you can take the energy that's taken you into misery, and you can channel it towards happiness and prosperity. And if you know what the trick is, if you crack the code, I love that metaphor. I'm going to steal it, Doug.
You can have it.
The code is exactly. Because, you know, you, as you know, Doug, this is a worldwide community. This is not me, me, me. This is not, you know, I'm such a great researcher. I figured it all out, you know. I may have lit the little fire that's turned into a bonfire, but a whole lot of people brought logs to it. So I don't even allow people to say that I'm the developer. I'm the co-developer because a large community is developing it. And the it is not just a psychotherapy. The it is, can we crack the code of how the human mind works in such a way that by our deliberate action, we can take what we really want deep down and get our behavior organized around actually getting that instead of waiting for your life to start when your anxiety goes away, waiting for the bad memories to disappear before you can have permission to take the next breath whole and free. I mean, this wait, wait, earn, earn, it, only if you're special, only if it goes away. You know, this little mental thing that suggests that it's only when we can somehow subtract, delete, or cut ourselves off from pains of the past that we can move forward towards a more prosperous future, that just puts us in an infinite holding pattern. Because the human nervous system doesn't have a delete button, not a healthy one, short of brain injury. And you're going to go to your grave with all your miserable memories. They have no place else to go. And you are not stuck with them. You're not stuck at all. That's an illusion of mind that is trying to take a problem-solving strategy that's great for vacuuming up your floors or getting the peeling paint off your walls, and is horrible for dealing with the, you know, potentially traumatic-inducing memories that we may have to carry, or the places where we've failed others or disappointed ourselves, or the things that we've done that we're ashamed about, or the things that we're tempted to lie about, or the things that we're afraid that we might be seen to have as properties or as ways of being. So it's really easy to get it in our own way, and we're feeding it massively, and not on purpose. It's not, nobody's sitting down and saying, boy, do we really want, depression to be the number one cause, you know. As you know, Doug, you about 20 years, depression was the fourth and fifth cause of disability and missed work days and of, these kind of problems of living. It's up to number one because we keep feeding the beast, and not on purpose, but science can help us with that. Because, you know, not everybody's going to go and, you know, be on a 10-day silent retreat. Would that help you? Probably it would. It isn't just the Buddhists, you know. All of our wisdom traditions, all of our spiritual traditions, every one of them, rein in analytic, judgmental, self-critical modes of mind. Whether it's repeated chair or prayer or silence or chanting or koans you can't answer logically, or you know, something, you know, meditation, because, you know, this problem that we have is, you know, it's as old as human language and symbolic thought, and it really got to be a problem once we start writing words down, and it's been put on steroids now that you can put it into, you know, the internet and the computers you got in your pocket. So that's that sense in which we need modern minds for this modern world. We can't just turn humanity loose to this one evolutionarily recent adaptation and expect good things to happen. The whole of us has to get in here. And that includes things like our basic yearnings, our values, our choices, the spiritual aspect of us, the things that connects us and conscious to others. And I think that's where meaning and purpose resides, and that's where cooperation resides. And so, yeah, it's a challenge to live a human life in the modern world, and the challenges are going up. So time for Western science to get in the game and stop biomedicalizing everything and saying, you know, the reason you're suffering is you got some sort of hidden illness, some sort of latent disease. That's not true. And everywhere that's gone in the world, things get worse, not better. Even the NIMH, National Institute on Mental Health, has kind of given up on that. They don't even want to fund it anymore. They want to figure out what are the processes that lead people into these kind of life cul-de-sacs. And they've been funding over the last 10 years research just on that. Now, their theory is that it's brain processes and brain circuitry and genetics, because it, you know, very biologically oriented research system that we have. But that's cool. At least it's progressive, and you know, biology is clearly part of it. So let's get on the same page, figure out what those processes are, and then turn them loose so that we can get things going in the right direction. And there's only so many opiate crises, immigrant crises, climate change crises, you know, suicide, allergy, depression. There's only so many of those that you can stand as a human community if we're time to wake up and to do something different.
I use a metaphor, Steve, to make sense of some of what you're talking about, which is that a master mechanic may or may not have a car that works. Just because you know, we're psychologists doesn't mean that we're psychologically healthy. And I've gone through things, you've gone through things, all psychologists are human beings with the same minds as our clients. And I encourage all the listeners to find your video, your TED Talk that describes your experience. I wonder if you could take a few moments now to kind of share with us how your own personal journey, you know, brought you into awareness of how to approach our own demons, so to speak.
Yeah, I tell this story in A Liberated Mind, and I tell a lot of my personal story, and there's a reason for it, is that, yeah, we're talking about science matters, but I want to make this thing really practical. There's a whole lot of really simple techniques that people can use to sort of get this thing turned. When you see how this pivoting works, you realize this is within your reach. You can do this. And there's a real self-help piece in there, but I wanted to tell the science story, but, you know, people's eyes glaze over if you don't do that well. I did my best to do it well. But even then, I want people to have a human face to it. So I'm talking about clients. I'm talking about people who have been worked with by folks around the world, but I talked also first about myself, because I figured, okay, if people know that I'm not talking down here, that this is something I know about from the inside out, they might hang with me a little bit and walk through this and then try some of these things out themselves. But yeah, you're talking to a person who developed a panic disorder early on in my academic career. And it got to the point that, you know, I couldn't give a lecture to a class of five students. I mean, I had to show films or something because I couldn't make sound come out of my mouth. And it spiraled down over a three-year period into narrower and narrower and narrower. And, you know, I'm taking the tranquilizers. I'm going to see the shrinks. I'm doing all the things I'm told to do. I'm using my cognitive behavioral methods. That was what I was trained in. And it just seems as though it's getting worse and worse. No matter what I do, I can't get rid of this anxiety. Can't make it go away or diminish or stop. And when it thunders in, people don't understand this unless they've actually had this experience. But when panic thunders in, you become almost incapacitated. And like sound should be able to come out of your mouth, then it's really hard. And the story that I tell in the TED Talk, I actually give part of the TED Talk sitting on the floor, because I was sitting on the floor 3 years into this spiral into hell, thinking I'm having a heart attack and I'm going to call the emergency room and get an ambulance to come, and I've got all the symptoms of a heart attack. And for some reason, that's all. I keep reaching out to the phone. My hand comes back. I reach out. It comes back. And I had this almost out-of-body experience of what the heck's going on here? Why are you making this call? You're going to die if you don't. And somewhere in there, I realized with a horrifying, sickening, stomach-dropping moment that, no, this is just another version of a panic attack. And I just knew it. I could feel that, oh, shoot, it's just another level down of hell. And I kind of felt like I had no way out. I mean, I just sat there feeling as though my life was over. And in the talk, I actually do a scream. Before I did this TEDx thing, I got in front of my wife. I looked at her and I said, I don't think I can do this. And this was the scream, because it had only happened three times in my life. One, when I was caught in a machine and nearly killed at an aluminum factory inside a gigantic machine that makes aluminum foil. Almost chopped in two, and then once at the bottom of my panic disorder when I think I'm having a heart attack and I realize I'm not. And then in my TEDx talk 34 years later. And I'll never make that scream again. But I wanted to do it because I wanted people to hear what it sounds like to hit bottom and think that you have no way out. And somewhere in there, I don't know how long it was. I know it was a while, because when I finally made that first pivot and stood up, my body ached, and I was a young man then, not the 71-year-old you're talking to now. But however long I sat in silence there after that scream, it occurred to me, it came to me, that there wasn't a way out, but there was a way in. I tell the story as the kind of, some of this is Eastern stuff. Some of this is stuff I learned on Hippie Hill. Some of this stuff is, you know, wisdom out of the Human Potential Movement and, you know, Esalen and the fruit nut seed mix of things that are, you know, asked the fruit that were in the 60s and 70s. Some of it, I actually tell the story of dreams of running away from dinosaurs as a little kid, and, you know, they would come and look at my house, and I'd run. You'd have one of those running dreams. No matter how fast you run, you know, you can't run fast enough. And the dinosaur, I'd finally break from the house, and I'd run and run, and the dinosaur would chase me. And somewhere in there, I had this lucid dream. You know, if I turned around and jumped in the dinosaur's mouth, I'd wake up. And I actually did it. And I woke up. Because every time the dinosaur caught me, I'd wake up. So I thought, oh, I'll just make this happen faster. And I had those lucid dreams enough that I stopped having the dinosaur dreams. They don't like that game. They want to chase you, not be run at. But however it happened, somehow or another, in that hitting bottom moment, I turned in 180 degrees and caught that I was following the dictates of the voice within that was telling me that I had to run away from panic, I had to fight panic, I had to hide from panic, and if I couldn't live, and no matter how fast I ran, no matter what turns I took, it was like the dinosaur dreams. It would catch me, because I would start getting anxious about the littlest indications of getting anxious, and anxiety became something to be anxious about, and guess what? That's like, if I'm talking to you and having a speaker right up here next to the mic, you're not going to hear me talking. You're going to hear, oh, it's the same thing. That's what a panic attack is. And I said out loud at 2:30 in the morning to no one, I don't know who you are, but apparently you can make me hurt. You can make me suffer. But I'll tell you something you cannot do. You can't make me turn from my own experience. You can't do it. And so it's a pivotal point in my life where you take that energy that says run away, and instead you put that energy to opening up, exploring with an attitude of real curiosity. What the heck's going on? Where am I feeling this thing called anxiety in my body, etc.? And when you do that, it's like the dinosaur dream. You've taken the destructive power out of it, and you've opened up a new journey where the yearning to feel, which is, I think, really what we want, that our mind tells us, okay, you can feel, but only when you feel the good stuff, which feelings don't come packaged that way. If you're going to give a talk, for example, and it's important, you're going to feel some anxiety. Hello? It's not an enemy. There isn't any emotion you can name. Think about it. Anything in here that you would not want to feel. Yeah, okay, just slow it down to that emotion, give it a name, and I bet you pay good money to produce it. Sadness. You watch the tearjerker movies. You buy the novels. Fear. You get on the roller coasters. Embarrassment. You watch those embarrassing comedy shows. I mean, there isn't a single emotion that you can name that we don't pay good money to produce, and yet people will practically kill themselves to run from those same emotions. What the heck is going on? So that night on the carpet put me in a different direction, but instead of running out the door and saying, hallelujah, I found it, I got this technique everybody should learn, that I spent almost 20 years trying to figure out why. And when we finally had unpacked it and cracked the code the way you were saying, then I put it out, and it's gone on to be now probably the most researched new psychotherapy method in the world. I think that's probably fair to say. And over the last 20 years, let's say. But it's the overnight sensation that took 40 years to produce. So, and a liberated mind is my first effort, really, to put the whole darn thing, not just a self-help manual, but the whole darn thing out there for just normal people to consider. You know, how would this land in your life? And can, if you try these things out and see, maybe I can even give a few examples before we finish of little things people might try.
But, sure.
So you can start using your own sense of waking up and moving forward as a guide as to whether or not this is of use to you.
Good afternoon. This is Doug Craig, your host on Wake Up Call on KKRN 88.5 FM. We are speaking with Dr. Stephen C. Hayes. He is the principal founder of Acceptance and Commitment Therapy, or ACT, and he's written a book that I recommend to every human being. It's called A Liberated Mind, How to Pivot Toward What Matters. In my view, ACT is a significant step forward, not just for the psychological community, but for the world of human beings with minds that don't always work for us. And even though Dr. Hayes is somewhat modest about it, I believe that he is certainly one of the most important psychologists that has ever come along. So we're just really thrilled to have you on the phone today. And we want to talk about pivots. And as a psychologist, I'll be celebrating my 32nd year in private practice the day this broadcast on October 1st. And without exception, just about every client that comes into my office, they come in with an idea of themselves, a conceptualized idea of themselves, as you put it, they're a problem to be solved that they can't solve. And so they come to me and say, hey, I'm broken, I'm defective, everyone else seems to have it figured out, I don't, please fix me. And then they perceive that this whole thing called psychotherapy is going to be like a journey of 1,000 miles up a steep mountain. And what I love about your approach is that you kind of blow that whole idea up and say that, you know, that whole idea is part of the problem, that idea that I'm a broken person and need fixing. And what I love about the word pivot is if you just walk across a room and then turn and pivot, you kind of get the idea of what you're getting at, that whatever's not working in your life can begin to work in a second, or I think you put it as like a hair's width difference between, you know, being lost and being found. And so we don't have time to go over all the pivots and the detail that I would like, but let's just start with diffusion. You know, many of our clients are confused. They come to therapy seeking clarity, or what you call coherence. They yearn to understand, but too often our own thinking, the thing we're using to try to get clear, is the reason we're confused. So how do we pivot from living in our minds and instead move toward increased flexibility, workability, and greater wisdom and peace of mind?
Yeah, that energy that's in there of understanding, kind of knowing the lay of the land and stuff, is there even before the symbolic thinking shows up, but it becomes dominantly that. I've kind of, there's an amusing study as to, you know, what do children fight about the most on the preschool playground? You might think it's who gets the toy, and no, it's not. I'll give you a clue. It's the same thing you'll find in your staff room. It's who's right. And so, you know, once we got just a little bit, it's just enough for preschool. That's not right, don't you? You know, make it into an adult voice. That's the voice in your staff meetings, probably. But, you know, that issue of being right is, you know, figuring out, having it all kind of laid out clearly, knowing the answer. You know, but the problem is when you're dealing with this historical creatures that we are, you got lots of stuff in your minds that is not very helpful, and you have two minds about everything. I mean, take anything that, you know, you like, for example, anything. Now try to criticize it. You can do it. You can do it by appealing to things that are actually there. It's not like you're making it up. I bet you. Just look around the room, pick any object. You can probably find something to criticize about. So, and the same thing with you, too. I mean, you wake up in the morning, you can go there. And so what are you going to do with this cacophony of voices, some of which, after all, you came by honestly? You've been criticized by parents, siblings, friends, somebody. You know, and they also, you know, have positive voices in there, too. I mean, even four-year-olds understand the little Disney cartoon image of Goofy with horns and Goofy with a halo on their two shoulders. So it's not very sophisticated. And so what are you going to do if you're yearning for peace of mind, coherence, understanding, kind of figuring it out, if you have two minds about everything? How are you going to find peace of mind that way? Well, turns out you can find it through a different kind of coherence. Instead of literally all the ducks in a row, nice little neat thing, you can do it by finding a way to rein in the mind enough to be able to watch it do its thing and take the thoughts that are useful and leave the rest. So you get this kind of functional coherence where this is helpful to me, this isn't, but not in some sort of critical way. It can be kind of like if you had a three-year-old following you around giving you investment advice, you'd probably say, oh, thank you very much. You probably wouldn't say, oh, should I invest now? I mean, you're going to lose your money if you do it. And in the same way, lots of the things our mind has to tell us is like that. So we call it diffusion. It's a made-up word from the word fusion. It comes from a Latin word that means to pour things together. What's been poured together is the meaning that your mind gives you to thoughts and the things they refer to. As if you think you're dealing with the situation when you have a thought like, I'm bad, or this is awful, or no, you're not. You've got the situation, and you've got the mind evaluating it as awful, which under other conditions might even be a different evaluation. So I'll give you some examples that people can use. Still, take a thought that is really punchy, powerful, difficult, the kind of thing that stops you in your tracks or that bothers you at 2 in the morning, the kind of thing that, you know, you tend to argue back about, and yet it's old, it's been around a long time, you know, things like you're no good because, or, you know, pick something. Distill it down to a simple little sentence. And then see what it would feel like to sing that to the tune of Happy Birthday. What would it feel like to say that in the voice of your least favored politician? What would it seem like, feel like if Donald Duck said it? You know, where you just play around with it. You don't know how to subtract it. If I say Mary had a little, You know, people are going to think lamb if you grew up in this country. If you tried really hard not to think of lamb, like, oh, that lamb is bad, like I was trying really hard not to think about anxiety when I was struggling with anxiety. Yeah, but pretty soon I'd go, oh, I can't think about anxiety. I need to think about relaxation. I need to think calm and relaxed. I'm calm and relaxed. Well, pretty soon the word calm made me nervous. You know, because it's linked over in the same way that if I say something like hot, you're going to think cold. The fact that it's different doesn't mean that you're not going to think about it. So people try with obsessive compulsive things, distraction, thought suppression. They try to program their minds so they don't have thoughts, and what they do is just pave new roadways to the same thoughts. And so they have more. That's really clear from the literature. So what we try to do instead is diminish the impact. And I've given you some maybe silly-sounding things like singing them or hearing them in funny voices. A way that I like asking people to do it. There is another TEDx talk. People can search it and find it online easily. Not that first one, My Night on the Carpet, but a more fun one about using these different diffusion methods. And I finished that little TEDx with this one because I like reminding people this is not about ridiculing your mind. You are not ridiculous. You're just human. And so reining in the mind can be funny, but it's not because you're silly or ridiculous. And what I ask people to do is take a critical thought. Remember how old you were when you first had thoughts like that. And almost always you can find it when you're pretty darn young. If you're having a thought like, I'm not lovable, I bet you were 4 or 5 when you first had that thought. Or I'm not good enough, then you're probably in that same age range. And I ask people to picture themselves at that age in front of themselves, really take the time to imagine what you look like from those school photos and your funny hair and your goofy shoes, and then take this thought that you're struggling with even now as the much older person they are now and have it come out of that child's voice, that mouth, come out of that child's mouth in the child's voice. Actually hear yourself saying thoughts like that. And, you know, it'll break your heart to listen to it. You know, I'm unlovable in the voice of a child. Hurts to hear. You do it to the person in the mirror, I mean, you're very easily, yeah, you are. You know, what's the matter with you? You do that with a child, you know, what you want to do is hug them. You want to comfort them. Well, you know, where in our developmental trajectory did we lose compassion? I mean, where did we somehow no longer deserve kindness? And so can these methods, there's hundreds of them, and there's scores that I mentioned in Liberated Mind, that put the mind on a leash is not about self-ridicule, it's about self-compassion or self-kindness. You're just a symbolic thinking creature, and it's new on the planet. And because of that, you know you're going to die. Because of that, you can criticize even yourself. Because of that, you're able to do science and technology. Because of that, you can commit suicide. You can imagine that life will be better without you. And, you know, 6-year-olds do commit suicide. 2-year-olds, no. No. No examples. 6-year-olds, yes. That's enough. When I wrote the first ACT book, the first sentences in the book, that was in 1999, after about 20 years of this journey, was a 6-year-old child threw herself in front of a train today. The authorities said her mother had died from a terminal illness. It's out of the New York Times, and it so shocked me. Think about how tall you are when you're 6 years old. You're just a little one, and that's enough to say, I'll feel better to be in heaven with Mama rather than to be here feeling the pain I feel right now. So the mind doesn't know how to stop. It'll tell you to do the most destructive thing known to life, which is to remove life itself. And you quoted the statistics, getting worse every year, because we're feeding this problem-solving beast and letting it run our lives instead of us using it when it's useful and respectfully declining the mind's invitation to use it when it's not. And these little micro-methods teach you how to do it. And like that pivot thing you mentioned, like turning on a ball of your foot, as soon as you head in a new direction, as soon as you realize there's an option, Well, now you're on a different journey. You can learn more skills. You can get better at it. You'll probably be working on it the rest of your life because the mind's pretty tricky. It knows how to hook you. But that's okay. One step at a time, but now in this new direction, and that's the pivot. Let's stop trying to have all our little mental thoughts lined up in a row. Instead, can we put the mind on a leash, show up as the conscious human beings we are, and then focus on what really brings meaning and purpose into our lives and put our behavioral efforts there. That set of pivots is something you can start today. No matter how miserable, no matter how depressed, no matter how anxious, no matter how, it's not a cure-all, it's not a panacea, I'm not saying that, I'm just saying you're not stuck, it's your mind that has got you stuck, and let's get walking in a new direction.
What I love about ACT is just what you're describing, that we're storytellers, we tell ourselves stories, and they help us, and but sometimes they don't help us, and sometimes it helps to step back and ask, is this story helping me? And I sometimes will ask clients to come off the stage of their life and sit in the audience with me, and we look and we say, so how does it look from here? Can you see what's not working up there? If you're just tuning in, I'm Doug Craig. This is Wake Up Call on KKRN. We're talking with Dr. Stephen C. Hayes. He's the author of A Liberated Mind, a book I recommend for anybody with a mind. And the subtitle is How to Pivot Toward What Matters. We probably need to have you back to go into more detail because we're running out of time quickly here. And as you know, in your training, the clock is our enemy. So, as you often say, and but in terms of the other pivots, you know, there's the self pivot, the art of perspective taking. There's the acceptance pivot, learning from pain, the presence pivot, living in the now, the values pivot, very important kind of logotherapy, Viktor Frankl kind of finding meaning in our lives, or what you call caring by choice. And finally, action, committing to change. That's the sixth pivot. Also in your book, I just want to let people know, it isn't just theoretical. You go into specific detail in part three of the book in relation to a lot of things people struggle with: dieting, exercise, coping with stress, insomnia, depression, anxiety, substance abuse, eating disorders, psychosis, relationships, nurturing flexibility, parenting, relationships with romantic partners, combating abuse, overcoming prejudice, tackling procrastination, learning, creativity, constraints at work, sports performance, cultivating forgiveness. You look at ACT and religion, chronic pain, diabetes, cancer, tinnitus, which I suffer from, terminal illness. And so this is...
And finally, appropriate for this on this social transformation. The final chapter in there is, and now let's take these psychological flexibility skills and get about the business of working with others to make a better world. And I know you normally have climate scientists on here, and boy, isn't that clear we need to do that. So thank you for that list. And if people are thinking, oh God, he's saying we've got the answer to all of life's problems. No, what I'm saying is human beings are the answer to the human problems if we can take the energy and creativity and abilities that we have. We can do anything. We're that good as a species, but we have to learn how to rein in the very abilities that led us to be able to live anywhere on the planet or even off the planet in space vehicles and so forth. I mean, all this incredible creativity. We've got to find a way to actually make it psychologically healthy to be a human being, not just that we can use our mental powers to create physical technologies and so forth that then sometimes have turned on us, whether it's nuclear bombs or the fossil fuel industry or the big pharma or you name it. You know, we've got to be wiser, and not just by wagging fingers and so forth, but by digging down the whole human beings we are, and then working in community to get solving these problems. So
and
I
Steve,
hope people heard that list, Doug, as, yep, boy, that's cool, and not just like, oh gosh, he's saying This is the answer to the universe.
It just has applications to anything. Anything we struggle with, it has applications. There's ways to apply it. Again, cracking the code. We do just have a couple minutes.
Human beings can focus on anything.
That's right.
And if we power us to be more ability, if we power our ability to be whole and free and creative and so forth, which is what this book's about, then let's get about the business of dealing with those challenges that we've got.
In your social transformation chapter, you talk about Sierra Leone and how they had to deal with the Ebola crisis, and how an ACT-trained therapist helped one area of that country had the lowest rate of increase of the Ebola virus in any of the infected districts. So this is pretty powerful stuff. Let me read a quote from the book, and like I say, we're running out of time here. Here's a great quote. When each of us learns how to put our own mind on a leash and become more able to open up, show up, and move forward toward what we deeply care about, we shine a light into the darkness that helps others do the same. And we have a good word for that, and that word is love. So in the final minute we have here, Steve, you know, help us tie it all together for us in 1 minute.
Well, what I signed my all my emails to, and you know we've corresponded, Doug, I said, you know, love is not everything, it's the only thing. And if that sounds a little sappy, then put it this way. How can we put a more loving space into our own psychological life where we get to be the whole creatures that we are, with our past pains, with our self-critical thoughts, with our difficulties, and be able to direct our attention towards what brings meaning and purpose into our lives and spend our lives moments focusing on that. And if you can do that and you can empower others to do that, you've created a softer, more creative, more livable world. And boy, do we need it. If you're not sure, turn on the television. Open up that computer in your pocket and say it's time for doing something different. And it's in our wisdom traditions. It's not like we're here as babes in the woods. We know a lot, but can we use Western science to pull it at its joints and do the 20% that does the 80% instead of, you know, wandering around not knowing what to do or waiting for us to be fixed before we get to be alive. And I try to walk people through it in the book and show you the evidence for it, personal, because you can do it, scientific, because the studies are there. And, you know, give it a shot. Have a look and see, and let me know how it turns out. I'm reachable.
Thank you, Steve. We're out of time.
That'll support you.
Yeah, we're out of time. We've been speaking with Stephen C. Hayes. He's the author of A Liberated Mind, How to Pivot Toward What Matters. You've been listening to Wake Up Call. I'm Doug Craig on KKRN-FM. Coming up next is Tom Hartman. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Doug.